breaking out. I'm gonna leave you now. There's nothing for me here. It's another episode of Columbia House Party. Jake, what's up?
Not much, man. How are you?
Good. I know that one sounded like I just, like, dropped the lyric and said, it's another episode of Columbia House Party, but no, that flows if you know the lyric.
It fits. Yeah. I was singing it. I actually had to take a minute because I was singing it in my head, so I couldn't speak at the same time. So I'm into it.
Yeah. Are you ready to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars? Because we're going to talk about the Jacksonville Jaguars in this podcast, and I'm very excited.
All they need is an offense, a defense, and some rule changes.
Yeah. Bortles. I don't get to talk. I don't have a football podcast. I can avoid talking about the Raptors on this podcast for the most part because I have a Raptors podcast. I do not have an NFL or Jacksonville Jaguars podcast. We're going to talk Jaguars today. Weird as that might seem.
I would have more to say if we were doing this podcast like 6 years ago, but now I just had my fantasy draft and I don't know like half the guys on my team. So I'll try to keep up. I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, well, you know what? Most of those guys are probably on the, by the time this airs, the NFL's probably shut down anyway. So
yeah, fair enough.
Anyway, this is episode 50 of Columbia House Party. Thank you so much for listening along. Jake, we made it to 50.
The big 5-0.
Can I ask you just like an honest question? Did you think we would get to 50 episodes?
No.
Well, there's our answer.
I mean, we got hit with a fucking pandemic in the middle of the first 50. So I feel like I didn't really know what was going to happen. But no, I think it's fine. I don't know. Has it been a year? When did we start doing this?
Yeah, I mean, it's one a week, right? There's 52 weeks in a year. So we're 2 weeks away from the 1 year anniversary. Our first good episode aired on November 4th.
What I will say is good on us.
Yeah. You know what, though?
And good on Dylan.
Good on Dylan. Dylan carried this. You know what I would say is probably the most surprising thing about being 50 episodes in is that the brainstorming sheet of episodes we want to do has somehow gotten longer as we chopped 50 episodes off of it, because the first thing anyone tells us when they find the podcast or hear about it or whatever is, you know, their suggestion of this album or five albums we should do, which is great. It shows us that people are engaged and there are no shortage of ideas. So here's to another 50, Jake.
There are too many albums. That's what I'm going to say. Please eliminate three.
There are just enough albums.
I am not a crap.
Cut three albums, eh? Well, Pup has three albums. There you go. Those are the ones that are...
It's true. There you go.
Oh, by the way, this is episode 50. Thank you again for listening along. If you would like to support patreon.com/Columbia House Party, you can do so there. Failing that, please rate, subscribe, review, all that good stuff that I say half sarcastically but mean 100% sincerely. We would love some ratings that say like happy 50th or Jake, we love you. Just I don't know, not any reason. Jake's not down or anything. I just feel like Jake deserves a pat on the back. Maybe even show Dylan some love if you like the way these podcasts are edited. So
I could use a pat on the back, and I think I deserve more. As a straight white man, I have not gotten enough pats on the back.
We don't need to make it about that necessarily. I was just trying to make you feel
I want
good.
More recognition.
You're being a straight white guy does not preclude you from having nice things said about you or feeling nice about yourself. I was just trying to be nice. All right, we got to pivot off of that. That's what a mess. The last 5 weeks, we have done Canadian bands. Four of those have been early 2000s pop punk in the Canadian scene, or late 90s in the case of Gob last week. We are now boarding a plane from Billy Bishop Airport here in Toronto, leaving our scene, but not leaving this time frame. We're going to the American pop punk pantheon, and to do so, we have to get on a flight to the Randy Macho Man Savage non-international airport in Jacksonville, Florida, if you know your Good Place references. That, of course, is the home of my Jacksonville Jaguars, who, by the way, I am going somewhere with this. I got into because I first got into football via the Madden video games in the early 2000s. And if you're a Madden player around that time, you may remember the Mark Brunell, Fred Taylor, Jimmy Smith combo and the cool teal jerseys that made the Jaguars an attractive Madden team. You may have also, if you were playing Madden around that time, heard last week's band, Gob, and this week's band while you were playing. So while we were talking about places with only one fan, like the Jacksonville Jaguars and myself, we're going to talk about an artist that has many more than that. And yes, today's band is truly from Jacksonville, Florida, not, as the name of this album might suggest, California. That doesn't make the album any less sunny or any less a pillar of the early 2000s scene, complete with an online following, Warped Tour appearances, and a Something Corporate tie-in. Today, we're discussing the Kings of Violin Punk and their 2003 album Ocean Avenue, Yellow Card. So Jake, obviously this podcast is in audio form only. I thought for the first time that we should have a video component to this one, just because the number of times I'm going to be air violining, and it's probably quite a sight to see. I feel like that will add a new Patreon tier that's basically my OnlyFans. You get access to my Raptors offseason salary cap spreadsheets and me air violining throughout this podcast. Are you on board with that? You'll still get a cut, but you don't have to contribute.
Yeah, I'm always down for things that I don't have to do anything for, but I still get a cut with, so.
All right, Jake, that was Miles Apart off the album Ocean Avenue by Yellow Card, which we're talking about today. Jake, what do you got for us on Yellow Card? How do you feel about Yellow Card? I know you framed this over email as we were plotting out this section of albums as more of a Blake album. But I'm sure it would be impossible to not have Yellow Card opinions. That's or true. Memories from sometime around 2003.
Very true. Like you, very much tied to the Madden franchise. I don't know if you remember, but in the old Madden games, in franchise mode, you had like practices. We had to do like the drills to improve your player's stats. Oh,
that was so annoying.
My friend and I used to do, because you could do like two player franchises. So we do franchises against each other. And I just have memories of like watching my friend do drills while a song that we haven't talked about yet played. I actually quite genuinely like that song, but I can't hear it without seeing like that passing cone device. It's just like,
me I hated too. That I thing, hated man.
It so much. But it's just like that is just burned into my brain. It's like that with like Feeling This by Blink, which I think was called Action at the time.
And like, yeah, because the captain, I think it's Captain America, the get ready for action at the start.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I'm not going to say that I have like any personal or deep connection to this band. I think this band is fine. I do think that this band is a huge missed potential here.
Yeah, so we'll get into that a little bit after. And I want to say here, Jake, I mean, a frequent thing on this podcast is me asking you not to minimize your own feelings or your own opinions. But I feel like you should not minimize something like a memory playing Madden with your friend and being reminded about this song as a connection to it. Because I think, you know, as much as maybe people don't think, oh yeah, football related to pop punk. Like the fact that a lot of these songs like Dance Dance from Fall Out Boy or Yellow Card got on these soundtracks, I really appreciate it. Like I've never been a video game person, but I've always played a lot of sports video games. And like you and your friend, I was more of a franchise mode guy than like a My Career or anything like that. And I would, you know, I'd be hanging out with friends and we would call it doing simmies, where you're just like simulating season after season and going head to head in like the free agent market and stuff. And, you know, the fact that some of my music got to play while we were doing that was amazing. So I think that totally counts as a connection to this.
Yeah, fair enough. I just mean, like, other than that, I have nothing to like. This is the most I've listened to Yellow Card in my life.
Right. I get that. And so you would frame this as a Blake album in our emails. And I don't know that that's necessarily the case album wise. To be completely honest, I had to go back and lay kind of four albums over this stretch of time out and be like, hey, which song was on which album? Like my association with Yellow Card was not the Ocean Avenue album. It was all of the Yellow Card singles. They were more of a singles band for me. As it turns out, most of the good ones are on this album anyway. So we're okay.
Yeah. I also found that actually.
Yeah. Like other than Lights and Sounds.
I don't know if I could name another one other than Lights and Sounds, to be honest.
Yeah. Most of them were concentrated on this album, even though only three of them were actual singles. Another wrinkle I want to highlight here, and maybe, you know, maybe our experience with Yellow Card being mostly a band you pull one or two songs out at a time from is maybe that was felt across lots of people, and maybe that's why they never quite capitalized on the Ocean Avenue momentum. I'm not sure. But a wrinkle here that I found, at least in trying to, like, you know, when we prep these episodes, I try to find, like, hey, is there an essay on how this album held up or the influence it had? Or, you know, I search my Twitter and see if anyone that I follow has tweeted about this band in the last couple of years. And I have found that Yellow Card is maybe a band without a major advocacy behind it. And it's pretty rare from this scene where, like, we had Taylor on to talk about All American Rejects. My friend Heather could come on and do The Starting Line. I could do Cartel. Like, everyone seems to have bands like that from this era that they hold in higher regard than others, maybe, or like, that's my band from the scene. And I have to ask, where are the Yellow Card stands?
I could be wrong, but I believe that our friends Sarah Finley and Drew Fairservice are big Yellow Card stands. I could be wrong.
No, there's no way Drew means that earnestly.
I'm not sure. I think he might. But I guess we'll find out. Well, I guess we'll find out if he listens to our show when this album comes out and he doesn't say anything. But if he does listen to the show, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, maybe we will. Anyway, the comparison that I came up with for Yellow Card being well-liked and well-remembered, but not having stans, are they the Paul George of pop punk?
Just like everything is there, but just couldn't get it done?
The things are there. Everyone agrees they're good. But no one's buying Paul George's signature shoe, even though it's a really comfortable shoe. I've played it.
It actually looks really nice too.
Yeah, it's the biggest gap between quality of shoe and like the amount you, like, I hear people talk about wearing the Kyries all the time. And obviously Kyrie has a bigger gravity of personality and more of like a marketable style of game. But like if you talk bad about any NBA player online, someone will yell at you. I don't know that that exists for Paul George.
Everyone loves it when Paul George fucks up. And he brought it on himself, too. But this is a whole other segment. But I do think, though, there's a comparison there. Because I do think that Yellow Card are the Paul George of pop punk in the sense that, like, there's so much potential with Yellow Card. And all I can hear is missed opportunity.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Ocean Avenue after this. All right, so quick band background. Maybe not that quick. They have an interesting starting of sorts. For the footy fans who are listening, yes, the name Yellow Card comes from a yellow card in soccer, although in their case, it's what they'd call friends out on if they made party fouls when they were all together in high school in Jacksonville. So instead of yelling party foul or, you know, punching your buddy or whatever, they would say yellow card. So there you go. Pretty straightforward.
In it, mate.
Yellow card. Yeah. Absolute scenes. Madness at these parties in Jacksonville. Donkey Doug was there. All sorts of good stuff. Okay, so.
We'll go to stupid Nick's wing dump.
Yellow card was originally a 5-piece with guest vocals from a 6th member and guest violining at times from Sean Mackin. Mackin would eventually become the only person who was in the band from their official start in 1997 all the way through when they called it quits in 2017. That 5-piece also did not include Ryan Key, the singer who'd eventually become as synonymous with the band as the violin. Previously, he had only worked as that guest vocalist who would help out sometimes. He eventually, after the first album, actually replaced Ben Dobson. That album, Where We Stand, was actually a bit more on like the punk or hardcore side than pop punk. Ryan Key obviously has, you know, kind of the cookie cutter pop punk vocals, and that led them that way, as well as incorporating Mackin on violin as a full-time member of the band. There are a few other lineup changes at this point in the band because they were teenagers and they were trying to figure out, are we a serious band and who wants to actually try to make this a thing? So some early turnover, Ryan Key gets installed as the lead singer after one album. And that's kind of where, for the purposes of discussion from here, I'm not sure how much people will care about the tweaks to guitar and bass and stuff like that. We'll mention them where possible. But the big thing is Ryan Key and Sean Mackin get locked in as lead vocals and violin, respectively. And that's where kind of the yellow card sound gets locked in. They released the Still Standing EP in the year 2000, then moved to Lobster Records to release One for the Kids in 2001. If you go back and listen to One for the Kids, it's still pretty unrefined. They're still figuring themselves out a little bit. A couple of the tracks skew probably too far toward Ryan Key, you know, figuring out if he could do more of an emo sound and figuring out exactly where the violin fits in a pop punk aesthetic. This song, though, Sure Shot, kind of gives you the best example off One for the Kids where they were heading going into their next album, which would be Ocean Avenue. This is Sure Shot. With the way that one sounds, could you guess it was Yellow Card?
I like that song.
It's good. There are a couple good songs on that album. Big Apple Heartbreak's another one. And there is a like very emo-y song that I'm drawing a blank on that I don't think they hit the mark on. But I'm curious if Ryan Key had spun off that point and done something solo, is that where they would have gone? But you hear it there, this mix of we have like a more standard punk guitar and drum approach. And then we have this violin, which gives us a unique sound. And then Ryan Key, while he shouts at times, is, you know, his melodies are very, very pop punk, which kind of is the formula here. They then move to Fueled by Ramen to release the Underdog EP in 2002. And it was around this time, kind of their pop punk sound struck a chord, right? They had these hooks. They had these good choruses. They had kind of, even though they were based in Jacksonville, Florida, they had kind of this SoCal pop punk sound that was coming out. They toured with Rise Against and the Mad Caddies. All of that leads to them signing with Capitol Records, who were, at this point, this is 2002, were scooping up basically every pop punk band that they could sign to just see what would stick and what they could throw out there. So Ocean Avenue would represent their major label debut in 2003. Weirdly, they didn't release a single until the album had been out for a couple months, which is especially weird because they were playing at Warped Tour around the time the album came out. Don't know what the logic was there. Jake, maybe just waiting post Warped Tour to get a video together. I'm not sure.
Yeah, especially like as we've talked about the last few weeks with like the power that MTV and Much Music had at this time, not having, and especially for a song that like is good, like weird that they didn't lead with a video. Like it's a very odd choice that I also obviously don't have an answer for, but I also don't understand it at all.
Yeah, it's a weird one. And maybe there was something missing in, with my research, and maybe Yellow Card's one of those bands that isn't particularly well documented from this time. And there was an explanation, but I couldn't find it. The single they eventually released as the first single also happens to be the album opener. It is probably up there in terms of best pop punk album openers as far as like, this is what we sound like. This is what you're getting. Strap in. And Jake, it's also your favorite song on the album.
And it's my Madden song.
This is Way Away.
Great song.
Yeah. Could you throw like an 8 yard out to a tight end right now?
Oh, hell yeah. Load up with, I don't even know who, Rich Gannon, maybe.
Rich Gannon. Oh my. Are you a Raiders guy?
I was. I have no allegiance to anything now. My football allegiance is to my fantasy team, and that's it.
Yeah. I'm not I got my Jags, Bortles. okay. So there's your Madden song. And that is like, I don't want to assume everyone has listened to every episode of this, but if you went back to our Jimmy Eat World episode way back when, you would have heard us talk about how songs like The Middle and Sweetness kind of hit this maybe need in the moment for some of the emerging, like obviously there was some darker emo stuff and some darker pop punk stuff coming out. And there was the is your kid an emo concern, but also like a fair number of the bands that broke through had kind of a layer of positivity, and Yellow Card hit that at times. And Way Away is basically, you know, it could be a Toronto Raptors song where it's like an ode to the disbelievers, as they called it. It basically functions as a history of the band as they move out to Los Angeles to try to see if they can make this all work. And there's like a little bit of rah-rah to it that, you know, wasn't for everyone at the time. And there are songs on this album where I feel like it gets a little too, it goes a little too far that direction.
Yeah.
But as far as a lead single and a song as good as this, it lines up pretty well. Like that's what you want to lead with off of this album, even though the title track was, would end up being a little bigger.
But like also this song and the title track as the sort of two, I guess, bigger songs, you could say, off this record, at least this had the Madden play and oh, obviously Ocean Avenue is Ocean Avenue. Neither of them really lean into that like rah-rah idea. And it's interesting that they're kind of the two best songs.
Yeah. I mean, Way Away does a little bit. Like, if you listen closely, it's kind of about the, like, we're going to do this and
get
behind us or get out of the way kind of thing. Yeah. It's so I guess the other question with Way Away off the top and the title track, Ocean Avenue, coming third, is what do you think of the album sequencing here? Because I know
we disagree
at times. Yeah. So that's what I was going to say. And like, this, because I think Breathing is a really good song too, and that's the second track. Mm-hmm. So you have kind of the three best songs on the album. Not kind of, I think the three best songs on the album, other than maybe Miles Apart, coming off right off the top. And I don't know, is that kind of the last vestige of the CD era where you have to hook people in via the singles and you go back to back to back with singles off the top? What do you think in terms of that? Do you like it, or did that play into the fact that, you know, for both of us, admittedly, Yellow Card was more of a singles band, and it's because you could fire up the first 15 minutes of the album and get the songs you wanted to hear?
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that it's a relic of the era, of the CD era, for sure. I don't know, like, now I feel different about it now than I think I would have when it came out, because back then, all we knew were like CDs, and MP3 players were just showing up. Shuffle was kind of weird. So like, for the most part, we listened to albums front to back. But back then, you were just like, it was just like how albums were. It was like, oh, of course the singles in the first five songs, and that's what I want to listen to anyway. And then maybe the rest is good too. Whereas now, when I found going back to listen to this, I agree with you. The first three tracks are absolutely the best three tracks in the record. And I think they are like genuinely really good. But then like, I just kind of lost interest by the end the way it's sequenced too, that like having Miles Apart there, what is it, sixth? It's like, okay. And then that song came out, I was like, oh, okay. And then you go back to like, into like Inside Out, and like it kind of kicks back in, and then like Back Home's okay to finish it off. But it just, I do think it's oddly sequenced, and it just like loses all the momentum. But because we are in 2020 and we do have the ability of streaming services and picking and choosing, now I don't think it's that bad, because now I can listen to those first three tracks and be like, this rules, and then go listen to something else and be fine.
Yes. And that, I mean, that would probably play into the problem further if you're talking like a success standpoint. But as a listener, it lines up just fine. It's not the worst thing in the world. And I do think there's an element of like how I think of album structuring now is maybe not fair to some of the albums from then, because like you did have to hook people in with a CD.
For sure.
Although then if you trace it back further than that, like on vinyl, you wanted to have a good balance because you didn't want people to only listen to one side or whatever. Anyway, we're getting too bogged down in that. This is the next single, by the way, which is the third track on the album. It is the title track, Ocean Avenue.
There's a place off Ocean Avenue where I used to sit and talk with you. We were both 16 and it felt so right. Sleeping all day, staying up all night. Staying up all night. There's a place on the corner of Cherry Street. We would walk on the beach and not bare feet. We were both 18 and it felt so right. Sleeping all day, staying up all night. Staying up all night. If I could find you now, things would get better. We could leave this town and run forever. I know somewhere, somehow, we'll be together. Let your weight crash down on me and take me away, yeah, yeah.
So Jake, the one thing that I think, starting with Way Away, first of all, but going Way Away, Breathing, Ocean Avenue off the top, one of the things I think it does before we get into talking about Ocean Avenue as a track on its own is it does create, I guess, a sense of urgency early in the album. It's three pretty high adrenaline songs with a good tempo. I think that helps songs that are like fairly basic lyrically play up a little bit. And then Mackin's violin work, which already makes Yellow Card stand out because not very many bands were using instruments in the violin family in their pop punk. But I think it adds like a third layer of tempo where, like I said earlier, you have the punk and drums that are rooted in punk and borderline hardcore at times. You have this traditional melodic pop punk singer, and then the violin just kind of like, especially when it comes in early in songs or in bridges, it just, to me, it adds, and maybe urgency is not the right word, but that's what it does for me, I think. And I think that's pretty present on Way Away and especially on Ocean Avenue, that's what makes Yellow Card different when they're at their best, is like what the violin adds to these otherwise like fairly up tempo, but not particularly out of the ordinary pop punk songs. Do you think that's a fair evaluation of how the violin plays up for them?
I do. And I think the way they use the violin both highlights everything I like about this band and everything that frustrates me about this band. Because like, to your point, when they're at their best, the band kind of sounds like Owen Pallett being backed by Blink-182. And that is absolutely a compliment. And like, I think it is really cool and really unique sounding, but at the same time, the way they use or don't use the violin in a lot of these songs sort of highlights that mispotential I was alluding to earlier, because I feel like in a lot of cases, not every case, because it doesn't apply to every song, but I feel like in a lot of cases, I just don't like how they use the violin, and I recognize that it's tough to do, because when I think about a band like Murder by Death, who also incorporates strings full time, who have a cello, obviously very different form of music, but you'll see where I'm going with this. Like, a cello is like a rhythm section instrument. It can lead a song. It's got that big, heavy, lower bass sound. Whereas a violin is very much like a lead guitar kind of instrument, where it's not going to be like your bass of your song. And I think that does lead to challenges of like, how do we use the violin that doesn't just sound like another guitar? And they do that a couple times. And when they don't use the violin that way, like on the chorus of Ocean Avenue or in sort of the verses or pre-verse or whatever you want to call it of Life of a Salesman, it works so well. And you're right, it does differentiate them from a lot of other bands at this time that just sounded like the song Ocean Avenue without a violin. And I don't know, it frustrates me because like there was so very clearly something there that was just never, and maybe it couldn't work fully, I don't know. But I just wish there was more. Also, I blame the fact, and this is from the Ocean Avenue music video, that it is impossible to look cool doing punk jumps while playing a violin.
That might be part of it for sure. To me, what the use of the violin when it works here makes me think is that, do you remember Ashley MacIsaac?
Of course, I'm Canadian.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, just making sure, like, I really wish we could run back Ashley MacIsaac's career and put him as a fiddler in some like punkier bands, and maybe even like, I mean, he was pretty badass on the fiddle, and I feel like that would add a nice element here in a way that Yellow Card never consistently grabbed. And you know, MacIsaac would skew a little heavier.
Yeah, I also think, to your point though, and I do credit Yellow Card for this, the ability to integrate a violin into this kind of music and not turn into a Celtic sounding band. Very impressive.
Yeah. So obviously Ocean Avenue is this enormous success. The fact that it made them stand out among what was becoming a pretty saturated pop punk scene at that point made them hugely successful for a minute. It was the album's second single and biggest success. It went 2x platinum as a single, made Big Shiny Tunes 9. It also hit number 1 on TRL and number 37 on the Billboard Hot 100. Basically, it's the song that launched them, and you mentioned the punk jumps playing the violin in the video. Also, the video is a take on Run Lola Run, where he keeps waking up in the same spot after going through the window. It's a pretty good video, yeah. Other than the punk jumps. Now, this is time for me to share personally again. Apologies.
Never apologize.
Jake, Actually, let me ask you a question first. Did you think that this song, Ocean Avenue, was about the Ocean Avenue in LA where the band had moved and which the song Way Away is about moving to?
100%.
It is about where they hung out in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I absolutely believed it was a California thing.
Yeah, at least that's according to what I found online. Apparently, there is an Ocean Avenue in Jacksonville as well, which I didn't know when I last went to Los Angeles. I shouldn't say last went to Los Angeles. I've only been to Los Angeles once. It was for work, maybe 2 years ago. And you know, I played this shit as I walked from Venice Beach to Santa Monica and then to the actual Ocean Avenue right as the sunset. Got some beautiful pictures that if I had a woman with me would have looked like the album cover. And I have this nice fond memory of listening to Yellow Card as I go visit Ocean Avenue. And I find out as I'm prepping for this podcast that according to the internet, it's about where they hung out in Jacksonville, not where I visited in LA. Oops.
Whoopsie.
Oh, well, yeah. That's tough. Also, when I was in LA, I stayed near Staples Center, which is not a great place to stay. I got an Airbnb there. And so I Ubered out to Venice Beach and then I walked to Santa Monica, which is a really long walk. It took me a good chunk of time, but it was beautiful. And then I had to Uber back. And at that point, because the sun had set, it was like LA drive time traffic.
Oh, God. I always am right there at the best of times.
Yeah. As I walked from Venice Beach to Santa Monica, I found myself progressively thinking how nice it would be to live in LA. And then by the time I got out of that Uber, I no longer wanted to ever come back to LA.
That's basically the story of going to LA.
Yeah. So there was a third single off of this album. You know, a little later in the album, you get Miles Apart, which we played earlier, and Only One back to back. Only One's kind of their shot at a ballad and was the third single. They also, and I think that this is, you know, maybe to your point earlier about how the violin stuff didn't always work, but also like cutting off your nose to spite your face a little bit. They cut the violin solo in the bridge of this song for the radio and video version because the original song was a little too long. And I feel like if you're Yellow Card and you've just had these two pretty good singles, including one monster single where everyone's like, oh my God, this band uses the violin, so cool. Don't cut the violin solo from your third single. Anyway, agreed.
They should never cut the violin solo.
Yeah, this is Only One. The version with the violin solo, I hope. I prefer the more like upbeat Yellow Card songs. And I think that's part of because they play better with, you could make a good like sad pop punk song or emo song with a violin. I don't think that is it. And I don't know if it's just like, I prefer Ryan Key singing at a more up tempo than a softer one, but I wasn't alone. It kind of not killed their momentum, but it certainly did not build off of the momentum that Way Away and Ocean Avenue had picked up for them. Jake, do you remember that single at all? Like, was that one of the ones in your head when you came back to this? You were like, oh yeah, that song?
No, kind of. I mean, it definitely didn't like, if you were to ask me what songs you think of when you think about Yellow Card, it wouldn't be in the first three I say. But when I heard the chorus of the song, I was like, oh, okay, I've heard this song before. But like, it never moved the needle for me, really. I've literally heard it before, is what I would say.
Yeah, they it's also apparently the first time they'd ever like built a track in the studio. And it's not like it's not a bad song. Like it's a nice,
yeah, it's
fine. As far as breakup songs go, it's like it comes at it from a nice place. But I don't know. It didn't quite click for me at the time. And going back to it, it didn't quite click. And I think at the time, like I really thought Miles Apart should be the next single.
I agree.
I think like clearly the next best song, if you don't want to go with Breathing, to have like three songs that are fairly similar, right as your first three singles. Anyway, the rest of the album, Jake, there are some good songs. There are some songs that don't hit quite as well. And I think there are a couple spots where like that earnestness and rawness I talked about earlier, and I don't mean rawness, I mean like raw, gets to me a little bit. And you know, the song 23 is kind of like that. And then like Life of a Salesman, hey, no disrespect to anyone who has a great relationship with their father or looks up to them, but that is basically like the daddy's number one candy baby of a song. If you know your Succession memes.
Yeah, that song, this is the worst comparison, but the way he throws in dad after every line, all I can hear is Connor for Real's Equal Rights song where he keeps throwing in not gay. And that's just like, yeah. I know it's
good
like
dad. Not at
all. Yeah, exactly. And it's all I can hear because my brain is a trash heap. But all I can hear is every time he says dad is Connor for Real. But that's just, I think that's probably literally only my problem.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's not the best ad lib, I guess you would call it, if we're boring a hip hop term. Elsewhere on the album, Jake, do you have any thoughts on any of the other individual songs before I close out the album with an embarrassing personal story?
Oh, I don't want to waste any time before an embarrassing personal story, but I don't know. I think that Back Home is an interesting song, I think, in the sense that I think it's a perfectly fine closer, but I also think there was like a template almost for like early 2000s pop punk album closers, and this follows it to a T. It's like kind of anthemic, but not that anthemic. And it's a kind of album that really, not really the kind of album, this kind of song, it just like feels like an album that like I would have found in like the recommendations section of a music store or something. Because if you like this, you like this. And then been like, I'm 15, sure. And it just like, and I don't mean that in a negative way at all, but it absolutely, that song for some reason to me, more so even than like the title track, that song's like, this is an album from 2003.
The song that precedes Back Home as you get to the end of the album is called 1 Year, 6 Months. The embarrassing personal story that I will share is that I have in my life written 2 songs.
What?
One of them.
Are we not counting the Blink-182 musical?
I haven't written that yet. Okay. Also, those will just be Blink-182 songs.
True. Fair point.
One of those songs, I wrote these both in high school. And keep in mind that I have no musical talent. I did not have an instrument. Well, I had an instrument, but I wasn't very good at playing it. And I cannot sing. I wrote a song that was basically this song, but it was just 6 months instead of 1 year, 6 months for a shorter relationship. I shouldn't be sharing this. It is so embarrassing that I basically just ripped, of all the things to rip off,
I love that.
One of the lesser songs on a Yellow Card album was where I borrowed from. I don't think it was conscious borrowing. I think it just ended up being very much like that song. Anyway, you guys, while you try to recover any respect you have left for me, you do that. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back to talk about how Ocean Avenue was received after this. So, right around the release of this album, Yellow Card was at Warped Tour. 1 year later, They're playing the main stage at Warped Tour. That's how big this kind of happened for Yellow Card and how quickly. Ocean Avenue, the album, debuted at number 99 on the Billboard chart. It peaked at number 23 and went platinum. It was so popular that they released an acoustic version of it in 2013 as well.
Really?
Yeah, it's on Spotify. Go check it out. I thought about playing one of the acoustic versions earlier, but none of them are as good as the main versions, unfortunately.
That's fair.
The ratings were all over the place for this one. Like, you could find ratings that gave it like nothing and ratings that gave it almost a perfect rating. And I think because there was a mix at the time of like, okay, the pop punk scene's getting really saturated and these guys are like very much on the pop side of the pop punk kind of spectrum. But then also people who are like, oh yeah, pop punk's having a moment for a reason. And also these guys throw a violin at it. And Ocean Avenue and Way Away are two of the best songs that this explosion has produced. By the way, if you are not a Patreon subscriber, which you can become by going to patreon.com/Columbia House Party, we were asked on a mailbag not that long ago. The question was, what band's most popular song or most known song is also their best song? And my answer for that was Ocean Avenue. Jake disagreed a little bit because Jake had likes Way Away better than Ocean Avenue. But I think in terms of that question, Ocean Avenue is very close. If it's not,
it's definitely a contender for the answer for sure.
Yeah. So despite ratings being all over the place at the time, like I said, the album went platinum. Rock Sound included it in its 51 most essential pop punk albums. Billboard's 100 greatest choruses of the 21st century included Ocean Avenue. And as we teed up, it got heavy video game usage. We're talking Madden, SSX, Flat Out, Burnout, and it was used on MTV Real World Road Rules Challenge, The Challenge. I hope I said that show name right, because I know people who like The Challenge are very hardcore, and I don't want to say, I believe it's Real World Road Rules The Challenge, right?
Yes.
To continue plugging our Patreon, as well as our singles mini episodes, which air Fridays on Columbia House Party, they also contributed to, Jake, the Spider-Man 2 soundtrack, which you may remember us discussing in our Dashboard Confessional episode, and its predecessor, the Spider-Man 1 soundtrack, which we discussed in our Chad Kroeger, Josie Scott singles episode. Yellow Card also contributed to recent Patreon episode topic, Rock Against Bush, Volume 2. So Yellow Card using that newfound popularity to get their hands in all over the place. Unfortunately, they also toured Ocean Avenue for like 2 years and then decided to take some time off. Ryan Key has said that the success kind of went to their heads. There was some additional turnover in the band, and things didn't sound like they were in the best of places, which, if you are a pop punk band that got big in 2003 and you do not follow that with an almost immediate follow-up album, in retrospect, big risk, and to your earlier point about Yellow Card, Jake, probably a missed opportunity. Eventually, they would come out with Lights and Sounds in 2006, which is... It got described as like a light concept album because it basically flips Ocean Avenue around, where Ocean Avenue is a lot about moving out to LA to try to make it. Lights and Sound is kind of about how they did not like that as much. It was not a strong follow-up in terms of success, or if you go back and listen to it, outside of the title track, Lights and Sounds, which was also the lead single and hit number 4 on the Billboard Rock chart, it didn't live up to Ocean Avenue. To give them credit, though, Lights and Sounds is a pretty good track, and this is it.
Nevertheless, I got you out on a wire. You be love and I'll be a liar. Selling
Jake, did you listen to much Yellow Card post Ocean Avenue? I know you said you were mostly a singles guy and they ended up being on Ocean Avenue, but was Lights and Sounds, like, did anything from that era of the band get through to you?
Just that I knew that song probably through airplay, but I've never listened to that album. But I do think you raise a good point that I never thought about or heard articulated before, in the sense that to be a successful pop punk band in this era, you have to have an immediate, like, hit record ready to go, basically. I would say to the point, you need to have an album where I get confused about which of your big songs are on which of the two albums.
Right.
Fall Out Boy is a great example of that, where, like, there's a bunch of songs on Infinity on High and even actually on Take This to Your Grave that I thought were on Corktree and vice versa. But you were right. At that time, because everything was so, like, as short attention spans as we have now, the way that, like, Much Music and MTV worked, you had to be on there all the time. Like, there was no room for, like, let's listen to Ocean Avenue again. Like, you had to have a new one.
Yeah, it's, you more or less got to do it, right? I don't know. But missed opportunity. And I know your opinion about their missed opportunity is more about, like, the band construction and their sound, right? Like, it's not, like, I think you're both agreeing with the missed opportunity commercially. Can you build off your point a little bit about where you think the missed opportunity here is sound wise?
I just think they could have gone further with it. Like, listening to, and, like, I, maybe they did. I will preface this by saying I have not listened to their later music. So maybe they tried this, but at least on Ocean Avenue itself, which is what we're talking about today, I feel like there are moments where, like I said, they sound like Owen Pallett with Blink-182, but I feel like that should have been in every song. Not that every song should sound the same or necessarily have to be upbeat, but, like, there's a lot of times where the violin is just doing what the guitar is doing, or there's a lot of times the violin is, like, buried in the mix even, or not even featured on the song. Like you said, they were cutting violin solos from track. Like, lean into it. I get you don't want to be a gimmick band, and, like, I know that was kind of a criticism leveled against them at the time, and, like, I understand that, but, like, maybe this is listening with 2020 ears and not 2003 ears, which I think is fair. But, like, I don't know. I feel like they should have leaned in, and, like, violin should be all over. Like, it's like Pucci. Like, when the violin's not there, everyone should be saying, "Where's the violin?" I feel like they should just, like, lean into it more and be like, "Yo, we're the pop punk band that has, like, long violin solos over our verses." Like, that's cool. Like, it's not cool, but it's cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's also different, which, like, when you're operating within a pretty saturated market at that. And I, you know, I'm skewing toward, like, suggesting they had been, like, not done what they wanted to do musically and be more, like, cynical about, like, how do we stand, like, make the music you want first and foremost. But yeah, I do think that leaning into a little bit of what made them unique and what made them successful probably would have sustained that success a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's a better way of articulating the point I'm trying to make.
So, Jake. We should wrap up from there. So Lights and Sound was not particularly successful. And then Ryan Key started dealing with some vocal issues. He wasn't able to talk or sing for a while. Eventually, they were able to. Now, why after Ocean Avenue, they waited 3 years for Lights and Sounds? And then after Lights and Sounds, despite Ryan Key's vocal issues, Paper Walls came out in 2007. I don't know how that all lined up the way it did, but I would have reversed the order of those things. They did take a hiatus after Paper Walls, and then they released four albums from 2003 to 2016. I don't think I listened to anything past When You're Through Thinking, Say Yes, which is a very Weezer album title.
It is.
Yeah. They then called it quits for good, or at least up until this point in time. It's possible they get back together later. But yeah, in 2017, they shut it down. So I guess to wrap us up here before we rank songs, Jake, how does this band hold up for you having revisited them? Like, I know you mentioned a couple of the songs are very, like, this is 2003. And I wonder if, like, because Ocean Avenue was so dramatically more successful than the other things Yellow Card did, that's part of why, to circle back to our earlier conversation, you know, they're a band without as many stands, to use the hip term, why they're the Paul George of pop punk. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that because of everything you just said, I think that this album holds up better for me than I would have expected. Like, I didn't come in expecting to dislike this record because I already knew I liked a few of the songs. It's not an album that I'm going to say I will ever like throw on. Like I don't see a situation where I'm like, I'm going to listen to Ocean Avenue front to back today, but there's enough good songs.
No, you'd listen to the single or Way Away.
Yeah, exactly. And there's like two or three other songs I might throw on as well, but there's a lot more music from this era of bands that kind of sound like this, minus the violin, that I wouldn't listen to at all. And like, that's not necessarily like trying to throw shade at it or anything, but like, there's a lot of 2003 pop punk music that's just like not very good. And I think that this is definitely a tier above that. I'm not going to say it reaches like, you know, if we're talking 2003, it doesn't reach your Good Morning Alkaline Trio and self-titled Blank levels or anything, but it's not like offensive to me. Like, this isn't an album like, oh, that's terrible. But I kind of expected, not to think it is terrible, but I definitely didn't expect to come out of this being like, there's like five or six songs in there I actually quite like.
Well, there are. So there you go. I think that wraps it up pretty well. Jake, speaking of songs you do like, we now have to pick one for the mixtape. And I think we're probably in agreement that it's either Ocean Avenue or Way Away. You could make a case for Miles Apart or Breathing, but I think Ocean Avenue and Way Away are so significantly more important to their breakthrough and, you know, capturing their sound that it's got to be one of those two, right?
I think it's got to be Ocean Avenue. Like, I think...
All right.
If you Ocean ask, you say Yellow Avenue. Card to anybody, and they're like, "Oh, Ocean Avenue."
Ooh, actually, one thing to consider: Ocean Avenue is already on the mixtape's B side.
Is it
from our May Mailbag episode?
Well, then,
yeah,
I guess we have.
Should we go with Way Away?
I guess we got to go with Way Away then. We make the rules.
Yeah, it's we avoid the one time I screwed up, and we had the same song on the mixtape twice.
A Blake spreadsheet. Do
you remember who that was? Almost. I don't think I ever told you. I think I just pocketed myself.
Then I definitely don't know.
We put Mariana by Nobro on there twice. So I changed it to Don't Die.
Oh, okay.
One of the references. Yeah, check out Nobro.
I don't know what an episode number it is. I'm not going to know what we've done twice accidentally.
Jake, it's episode 50.
Well, I know that now because you told me.
This is a long mixtape at this point. Way Away is the song that's on the mixtape. We are at the part of the podcast now.
I have a question for you then.
Sure.
That I just came up with that we're going to talk about on the air, because why not? Since this is episode 50, to your point, that is a long playlist. Should this be the end of volume one of the playlist? Just as Rock Against Bush has two volumes. Should we start a second volume?
No.
No.
I think, first of all, if we did a second volume, we would do it at the 1 year mark. So it'd be an awkwardly lengthed 52,
okay,
52 song one. But I think it's just the longer it goes,
just a forever mixtape.
The more it's, yeah, and it's just in one place, right?
That's true.
That way, it's a little easier.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm gonna say no, Jake. All right. Overruled.
All right, and you know what? I always go to whatever Blake says anyway, so works for me.
What Blake says next is a thank you to our Patreon supporter, Michelle. We greatly appreciate the support, as well as, you know, everyone who's active in the Discord and supports us on social media, and especially you this week, Michelle. It means a lot to us that you guys have continued to stick with us through 50 episodes, and for those of you who support us on Patreon, which, by the way, if you'd like to, patreon.com/Columbia House Party. If you don't want to do that, or if you're already subscribed there and haven't yet, rate, review, all that good stuff. Tell Jake nice things, and I'm going to keep talking so that Jake can't cut me off and demand you not tell him nice things. Speaking of nice things, we also want to thank producer Dylan, who's going to have to edit out how loud that I got there. And I only did that because I wanted to highlight how much Dylan helps us out, and not at all because I just have anxious tics where I yell for no reason at all. So thank you, Dylan, for making this podcast excellent. And just in case me writing that song that was a Yellow Card, a lesser known Yellow Card song ripoff, wasn't embarrassing enough, here is me just botching and rambling this outro. Jake, thank you for saving me during all that. We gotta look ahead to next week now, man.
Okay. I was just enjoying the ride there.
Yeah, I wasn't.
Yeah, no, next week's going to be really fun. It's one of my...
Yes.
If I accuse this one of being a Blake album, next week is very much a Jake album.
And as it turns out, this one was not that much of a Blake album. It was like five Blake singles.
No, not at all. I don't know why I thought it was.
I mean, look, I do love a good air violin. This album's not bad. It's just I don't know how it got construed as a Blake album. So we mentioned that not very many pop punk bands tried to borrow the violin approach from Yellow Card, but that doesn't mean that they were the only band using something from the violin family around that time. Next week, we're going to go toward the indie scene and just a little bigger of an instrument. You might say cello-sized. Next week, Cursive.